Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Celebrating 25 years as your host of the Garden Hotline. Here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Whoa, I've been here 25 years. I had no idea. Well, folks, welcome and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly. But right now, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Before Mr. Kelly gets out, professional question here.
No.
If there's a news conference at 9:45, mm-hmm. what does that do? Does that truncate the Garden Hotline?
It truncates it, yes. And so people get your calls in now because you have 15 fewer minutes to get Mike's expertise.
Whoa.
So don't wait. Call in now.
My show has never been truncated after 25 years.
I think you'll survive. The listeners may not because they're going to miss out on some good information. But we're going to hear about Paul Goldschmidt. He is planting his roots in St. Louis.
Really?
Yeah, so you get that?
You
You're on the Garden Hotline, and he's planting his roots in St. Louis?
Very, very clever.
Man, you know, you're getting that free, folks. Some people have to pay for that kind of whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Thanks for giving me the insight. Yes, folks, on Saturday morning, we get together, and we have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your backyard, what's going on in that side yard. And how about the front yard? Oh, you're a little bit sad when you come home because you cannot be proud of your front yard. Your welcome home is not all that good. And that specialty garden space, how do you improve that soil? How about a taste of the tropics? I've gotten my Kaffir lilies, which are tropical or house plants, out already. And what is potting mix? How do you improve your soil? Shearing, pruning, removing bugs, diseases. Using information to make good decisions, my thoughts and orchestrations hopefully will open or solidify your options with final judgment, of course, by you. This is your show, by the way, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me over into your home, your car, or wherever you're listening. And another very important player in this game is Alex. He's producing today. So I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline for 25 years. No way. That can't be. And anyway, I started in 1994. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are available at various locations right now. And right now, I also write articles from Missouri Gardener Magazine. During the week and sometimes on the weekends, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. My website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, that's where you can go to the homepage. And you'll find my email address and phone number there. That's where I can be reached. So today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. First weekend of spring. Thank goodness. That means winter is in the rearview mirror. Traditional tour de jardin around my jardin. That's, I think, French for garden. 3 sugar maples, which are the street trees. They're in flower. The squirrels have really done a good job eating a lot of the seeds or helicopters that have been hanging on there. But there are thousands that have fallen uneaten, and soon they will be germinating. The zoysia is getting ready to be cut low. I'm going to do that. I don't know if I can get around to it today, but within the next week or so, I'm going to cut it down to about a little bit more than an inch. And starting in the alley bed, boxwood. That's the only. I've got 3 boxwood on my property. And the one along the alley, which faces east and backs up to the garage wall, that's the only one that's foliage got some winter burn on it. And I'll prune that soon. But in this bed also, the lemon verbena. The fragrance is great already, and it's really pushing upward. The sedum acri, which is a ground cover, is moving horizontal. Purple coneflowers, nothing yet at all. I've got numerous pots with tulips, and they're really pushing up and out. No flowers yet, just foliage. And the tulips were I got from Brightside St. Louis. And also, they're showing that, I mean, really good foliage. It's nice color. As I said before, my Kaffir lilies, my houseplants, I've taken them outside. I've also planted cannas and elephant ears in pots. Yellow and purple crocus are in bloom in the near the front steps. And some daffodils, too. They're pushing up some foliage. They're getting kind of old, so I'm not sure they're going to flower this year. Daffodils anymore, they last, give you flowering, sometimes maybe 8 years, maybe a little bit more. So it's just a wait-and-see kind of thing. So along this south wall, my daffodils are just foliage right now. But all my daffodils are on the north side of my house. Now, there's a house across the street and up the street just a little bit. They've got daffodils planted on the side of their house, but that side faces the south. They're in full bloom already. So that shows you what a difference exposure can make. So that's one of those things. Window boxes, I've got all kinds of pansies, different colors in those things. And my window boxes with the herbs, the sage and thyme look good. The rosemary did not make it like usual. The other two boxwood, no winter burn, no anything at all. Mugo pine or Leland cypress, no problems at all either. And everything's in good shape as far as winter damage goes. Overall, the landscape welcomes spring, as well as the robins, the doves, the cardinals, and all the other birds in the neighborhood. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages. Party on! That's what the Garden Hotline's all about, and we're going to start off in Dardenne Prairie, and that's where Jane lives. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, I'm sorry. I put in 500 flower bulbs last November, and I've got the first ones up, and I was just thinking this morning, I've never really learned how to properly fertilize bulbs, so I'd like for you to enlighten me.
Well, basically, I like fertilizers that are powder. You mix them in water and you pour them. You can use a liquid fertilizer. You can do pretty much anything that you want. But basically, as soon as the foliage starts breaking the surface, you should fertilize them then. Then fertilize them until they finish, you know, once a month until they finish flowering. And then once they finish flowering, no more fertilizer.
Okay. Well, they need fertilizer then. You've taught me something new. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck with that. And
thank you.
A lot of times it really will make a difference. It won't necessarily give longevity to the bulbs, so it won't make them so, okay, if I fertilize them, they're going to last 10 years as opposed to 2 years, because tulips are only going to last for a couple years. As I said before, daffodils about 8 years or so, and it's due to the hybridizing of various bulbs and everything else over the years, because you can go into older neighborhoods and see some bulbs that are by houses that have been abandoned for decades, and the bulbs are still coming up and doing well. So it just shows you that, you know, we've kind of manipulated certain things. So from Dardenne, we're going to Florissant, pretty close by, and into Scott's yard. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Hey, I had a really nice zoysia backyard several years ago, and we got a dog a couple years ago, and
Oops. She's
kind of taking her toll on it.
Right.
And there's several places that crabgrass took over last year. And I went out the other day, was doing some thatching, and a lot of those spots are bare now. Would you recommend overseeding or seeding those spots with some other kind of grass to get it covered right now? Or
you could certainly do that, or you could buy pieces of zoysia sod. If you put other grass seed in there, it's going to, you know, kind of, with a, you know, let's say you put a cool season type grass seed, like a fescue or a bluegrass, it's going to look great while the weather's cool, but when it gets hot, then it's going to just turn basically kind of icky looking. So that would be the time when the rest of the zoysia looks good. So that's kind of the downside of kind of mixing things up like that. So it's a personal choice. And if you want to get, you know, I don't think the zoysia is available at garden centers yet, whether you wanted sod or plugs. But my tendency would be to kind of stay with what you have, but that's the choice is yours, obviously.
Okay, I put some patches of zoysia sod in last year in some of the bad spots, and I assume it would not be green yet, correct?
Correct.
So I'm not going to know whether it took or not until, well, until it warms up.
Well, also, anybody that's going to lay sod or plugs, make sure you turn the soil over first. Okay. And if you mixed in some compost, that would be ideal. But okay. just to sort of even just rake it and lay the sod down on top of it, regardless of the type of sod, that's going to be a little bit difficult for it to acclimate.
Gotcha. Thanks for your help. I appreciate it.
Certainly. Well, thanks for calling. And now let's go to Marge, and she lives in Breeze, Illinois. Hi, Marge.
Hi. Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for sharing your knowledge and advice for all of us.
Yeah.
I have a question about pre-emergent. I've heard you say several times that we should apply this to control weed seeds.
Correct.
I went to several stores to buy some of this, and I couldn't find any product that said pre-emergent. They all said, like, fertilizer with weed killer, crabgrass killer. Is there a difference between pre-emergent and these weed killers?
Certainly could be. It could be a broadleaf weed killer, and it could mean that it's going to kill broadleaf weeds that are perennial weeds that are coming up, not from seed. But anything that says preventer, that's going to be a pre-emergent. I just sort of put it all together as calling it a pre-emergent. So in other words, you put it down before the seed emerges, and then as the seed emerges, this chemical barrier that it creates, it kills the seed just as it's coming up.
Right, right. So if I bought a product that said crabgrass
preventer
killer,
or killer or whatever,
killer, would that be okay to use that?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't just kill crabgrass seeds. It's just everybody has certain things that are, you know, have been embedded in their mind their whole life. And crabgrass happens to be one of the weeds. I mean, how many people really know about henbit or some of these other things? So it's just, that's just the way the chemical companies make the presentation to make it so it's a little bit more amenable, you know, to the consumer.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much for clearing that up for
sure.
me.
Good luck.
Okay. Have a good day.
Certainly.
Bye.
And where should we go? Okay. Let's go to John in Chesterfield. Okay. Oh, let's go to Reed in Bethalto then. Sorry.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, I got a small lake in my backyard, and we had a beaver problem a few years ago, and I put corrugated pipe around the trunks of the smaller trees that I thought the beavers might cut down.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't had any beavers for a while, so I was wanting to take those corrugated pipes off of the trunk. Do I have to worry about it, those trees getting sunburned on the bark part of their...
Yes, especially any, you know, the side of the trunk that's facing the south, that's where the most intense sun's coming. So it's been so well shaded. So what you might do is just get some tree wrap it around and do that. And then, you know, after, let's say the intense part of this, you know, say the sun happens, take that off. So take it off in the fall as a day, you know, basically, or you can leave this on there until fall and then take it off in the fall.
Okay. That tree wrap, is that something you can get at a horticultural shop? Or
yeah,
something?
A garden center, anything like that. It's just, it's more or less kind of a, I don't want to say elastic, but it's like a flat, it's like paper, kind of paper tape. You just wrap it around.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you very much, Mike.
And another thing, I mean, what you could do is if you don't want to fool with this, is just the side facing south of your trunks, once you pull the corrugated pipe off, just paint the trunks white. And that would eliminate it should eliminate the problem of, you know, potentially getting sunburn.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Yep. And now let's go to Chesterfield and to John's yard. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Hi.
I got a question about climbing roses, but first a little background. I've got grapevines in my backyard that I trained to grow along the top of a privacy fence so that they get sun all day.
Mm-hmm.
And in wintertime, you know, they get pruned just like any other grapevine, and the main branches stay just fine. I'm thinking about doing something similar with climbing rose bushes on a picket fence in my front yard. Well, if I train the climbing rose to go along the top of the picket fence, will there be a dieback during the winter all the way back down to the ground, or how does that work with those?
Climbing roses are pretty tough They're really, as far as pruning goes, once we come out of wintertime, which is basically now, you just kind of give them a little bit of pruning. But for the most part, they don't need pruning at all. What you do with the climbing roses is cut off any kind of, let's say, stems or whatever that don't produce any foliage. But really, they need to be left alone more so than anything else. And then fed with rose food starting, let's say, in late April, monthly all the way up through September.
So they die back over the winter? Like when I have the hybrid tea roses, wintertime I cut the canes back down to like a foot or so above the ground. Do you do the same thing with climbers?
No, the climbing roses you leave alone. You don't do any pruning at all.
Do they bloom all season? Are there some of them do or not?
There's a few of them that do, but if you're not careful, make sure you research the particular variety, because some of them will bloom just once, and then that's it. Then they'll just be foliage. So,
yeah, I don't want that.
I can't tell you which ones. You could go to St. Louis Rose Society and ask them, or you can go online or go to the Missouri Botanical Garden website and see which ones they recommend for, let's say, repeat bloomers.
Uh-huh. Oh, that lady that called a while ago, or a couple of calls ago, about the pre-emerge.
Mm-hmm.
I have the same problem. I was looking for just a straight pre-emerge, and I found a lawn and garden center that carried just the bulk granular pre-emerge all by itself. But it was a big yard at Lake of the Ozarks. But maybe isn't it preen, just a pre-emerge, straight pre-emerge?
Preen is basically developed for bed space, not for lawns.
Oh, I don't remember if she asked about a lawn or not. But.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the actual chemically the difference is, but that's sort of the preen focus is, places where you have shrubs, trees, perennials, all that other kind of stuff, as opposed to a lawn area. I think because the way they sell it, it's not huge amounts, so most people's yards are kind of big, so you'd have to end up buying a huge amount or a huge...
Right, yeah. I don't remember if she asked about a lawn or not.
Yeah.
I had a big lawn, so I got 50-pound bags of stuff. Not preen, the straight pre-emerge stuff.
Right. So it's just a matter of where you go, where you shop, and the products they carry on, how they label them. But pretty much chemically, they're the same.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. Good luck with that. And let's see if we can get one more call in before break. And that would be Rick in South County. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have had a lawn service for several years, and I've got some more time on my hands now. I wanted to handle my lawn on my own and just treat it throughout the year. I know you've been talking a lot about lawns this morning. Could you just give me some general tips? I know pre-emergent about this time of year, but can you just kind of give me some general tips throughout the year of what I should be applying to my lawn? It's Bermuda grass mainly with some bluegrass.
Bermuda with bluegrass. Well, that's kind of contrasting things. But the Bermuda is a warm season grass, so it's Bermuda, not Zoysia, huh?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, our subdivision was built on a former golf course,
and
the Bermuda grass just came up. So
right. They
shotted it with bluegrass, originally.
It didn't make... Well, anyway, it's a warm season grass, so it's as soon as it starts showing some active growth, then you start fertilizing with a lawn fertilizer. I'd get a soil test done so you can find out exactly what's in your soil as far as chemically, because if there's too much phosphorus and too much potassium in your soil already, you got to be really careful about putting additional phosphorus and potassium, which are the last two numbers, in the bag of fertilizer with the big three numbers on the, in the front. And so consequently, get the soil test done, find out what chemically there is. And then with the warm season grasses, you start fertilizing late April, late May, late June, late July, late August, and once in September. And that's pretty much it. And with the dethatching, core aerating, putting compost down after the core aeration, that would be done in the springtime just as the grass is starting to green up.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages. Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have no callers right now, so if you call, you will be the first one up. This time of year, when I keep talking about putting the pre-emergent down, the gentleman emailed me during the week, and he said, We don't have any yellow forsythia in our neighborhood, so I don't know exactly when to put the pre-emergent down. So I told him to buy a soil thermometer. You want to put the pre-emergent down when the soil temperature is between 50 and 55. Now, there may be a few seeds certain at locations like, you know, let's say south exposure where it's reflective heat off the side of your house or something like that, that some of the seeds may have germinated. You may miss those. But for the most part, that's what you want to do. So no yellow forsythia. I always use that as sort of like the big sweep as far as without getting a soil thermometer. But the soil thermometer is the best way to do it because you can use it in several different locations. You can check out your south side yard and, oh, this is already there. But on the north side, it's not there yet. That doesn't mean you're going to wait and not put it down all the way around. But that's certainly a possibility. So by putting a pre-emergent and crabgrass preventer, whatever you want to call them. Again, I just generalize with calling it pre-germination emergent. You're going to get rid of spurge. You're going to get rid of ragweed. You're going to get rid of purslane. You're going to get rid of lamb's quarter. You're going to get rid of carpet weed, crabgrass, barnyard grass, goosegrass, foxtail, some of the violets, and plantain. And what that is what these... Some of them, they just drop the seeds. The seeds just lay there, you know, all winter long until the weather starts warming up, the soil starts warming up, and then consequently, here it comes. So that's what the pre-emergent does. So weeds are optimistic. They germinate when, and especially if you have a thin lawn or if you cut your lawn too closely, consistently. There could be a million weed seeds, but that doesn't mean all every million of them is going to germinate. Some of them are eaten by insects. Some of them are sort of like decomposed by microorganisms as well. But the germination can just be totally insane. And if you skip it, what will happen is those seeds are going to germinate. They're going to grow. They're going to flower. Then they're going to be dropping seeds all summer long. And they're going to keep dropping seeds, producing flowers, until the weather starts cooling, and then that's where the real trouble comes in. Let me go and remind you, soil testing, stop fooling around, stop guessing. It's just like you're not feeling great yourself. You don't just sort of like guess and figure out what you think might work. And with your soil is the same thing. Soil is, yes, it's dirt, but it's also soil. It has a lot of living microorganisms in it. Those microorganisms are extremely important for a good, healthy plant growth. Whether it's lawn, whether it's trees, whether it's shrubs, whether it's perennials, whether it's annuals, it doesn't really matter. That's where the real trouble comes in. And a soil test will tell you that, oh, your soil pH is really high. So if the soil pH is really high, then you want to change it so it goes a little bit lower. Or your soil pH is really acidic. So then you're going to have to add some lime to it. But just don't routinely add lime to the situation because it's not really going to work well for you. So just keep all that in mind. Let's go to the phones, and let's go to Pat in St. Peter's. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks. Have a question. We want to kill our lawn for weeds or spray for weeds or whatever, and then plant grass seeds. Is it too early to put the weed killer down now, and how long do I need to wait before I could put the grass seed down and overseed?
Well, if you're using a broadleaf weed killer or a spray, a liquid, so it's not a pre-emergent, you should probably wait, read the label, and this is with any kind of chemical, you should always read the label first. But usually the recommendation is if you spray something like that, it's about 2 weeks or so before you should put seed down. Now, it may, you know, the seed may be okay sooner than that, but 2 weeks is just, a general term that I like to, you know, just remind people that there is a waiting period, even though in theory this is a broadleaf weed killer and grass is not a broadleaf plant, that, you know, there's going to be some, let's say, hangover aspect of the chemical of the herbicide. So that's what you need to do. Read the label specifically for the product that you're going to get or you're buying and then go from there.
Yeah, it was one of the major brands. I read that, and it said 4 weeks before you plant any seed. Is it too early to spray for the weeds right now?
Well, if this is generally, let's say, a weed-be-gone type sprayer, if you don't see the weeds actually act, you know, you don't visually see them, It's contact work. So in other words, they kill the weeds when the herbicide comes in contact with the foliage of the plant. So if there's no foliage there that's visible, then it's not going to do anything.
Yeah, some of them are already sprouting. I could tell them, so they would kill them.
Right.
And then the other stuff, you know, I'd have to possibly wait after I plant my grass seed then, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
After your grass seed, not just planted, after it's healthy and robust and everything else. So you may have to wait until, let's say, deep into the summertime before you put any kind of, let's say, weed killer down.
Yeah, most of them that I read said that you're not supposed to do it over 85 degrees.
Right.
If it reaches 85 degrees during the summer, which pretty much eliminates spraying for weeds in the summer of St. Louis.
Right. It certainly does.
So okay.
You'd be going after them in the fall.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Mike.
Sure. And now let's go to Troy and Florence. How are you?
I'm fine, Mike. How are you?
Good.
Mike, I had daffodils that came up last year. It was the first year for their blooming, and they were nice big blossoms. However, this year they have not come up at all, and the flower bed is on the south side of the house. And the bulbs that I planted were unusually large. Has anybody had any experience with bulbs that have been modified genetically?
Well, sure, but I mean, when, let's say, last year when they bloomed, now did you leave the foliage on them until they until the leaves of the daffodil totally turned brown, or at least got halfway yellow brown? Then I think it's just a matter of timing more so than anything else. The soil temperature is just not right to trigger the growth, because they should be healthy, they should be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly. And now let's go to Wentzville. And Bart, how are you?
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
A couple quick questions. Is it too early to plant dahlias?
Not for me. But I mean, there's always there's always that thing where we might have a late frost or something like that just as they germinate. But I think you should be fine.
Well, I've already got some garden in. Fertilizing Russian sage help any?
Oh, sure. Anything, any perennial or anything, it helps. There's no getting around it.
Okay. I have a sack of 13. I know how you feel about fertilizer, but since it was left over from last year, and turf builder, so I can spread these on the lawn.
Yeah, well, are you talking about your lawn being a cool season lawn, not zoysia, right?
No, it's
bluegrass or fescue or something. You can put the cool season, you can fertilize that. I mean, just one application in the springtime for your cool season lawns.
Okay. And if you take soil samples, how big an area is that cover? I've got beds over 2 acres. Do I have to take it in all different areas?
Yeah, you should, just to find, assuming that it, you know, they're all exposure, soil, and everything else, just to find out, you know, what's going on in all the bed spaces kind of routinely.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Hi, we've had so many clouds, but man, the full moon the last couple nights, well, it's only full for one night, but early in the morning when I take my walks, it is so nice to see that. Ooh, I love the moon. Let's go to South City into Bob's yard.
Yeah, Mike, in your opinion, with the way the weather is this year, when would you put out banana trees, put them back out in the ground?
Well, I've moved mine. You know, I have Kaffir lilies, which are not banana trees by any means, but they're tropicals, and I've already moved my stuff outside. So I just figure I'm going to take a chance. But normally you'd want to wait at least until probably mid-April.
Okay, that's what I needed to know.
Right. But if you want to be wild and crazy, you can move them out, because you can start that, you know, if everything turns out to be okay, you'll see the growth just come rocketing out of the ground.
Okie doke. Thank you very much.
Certainly. And now let's go to Debbie, and she lives in Edwardsville.
Hi, Mike. How are you this morning?
Very good.
We have a question about our lawn, as many of you people have this morning. Our pH in our lawn is high, and we've been told to put sulfur on it to lower the pH. What kind of product do you buy? I know I have some elemental sulfur here that I put on my potatoes before I put them out, but that would be awful expensive to put that down. So what do you recommend, and can you name a product?
Specific product, no, but just look for iron sulfate.
Iron sulfate?
Yeah. The garden centers, all garden centers should have that. You want the iron there, too, because once the sulfur starts getting the pH down, then the iron is going to be, when the pH is high, let's put it this way, the plants can't absorb the iron. So iron sulfate takes care of two scenarios.
Okay, so that's all you need to buy is iron sulfate.
Right.
Product name that. All right, that sounds good. Thank you very much.
Certainly. And now let's go to Dennis. Dennis, how are you? Hello, Dennis, are you there? Oh, let's go to Joni in Alton.
Mike?
Yes.
Hi, I've been a 25-year listener, and I've loved every minute of it, and I think you're very awesome. So thank you for your show. I have a couple of questions about mimosa trees.
Okay.
So I've seen the big, beautiful ones that have, like, multiple trunks. And then I've got about three-year-old ones in my yard that seem to be growing like a single trunk.
Right.
So is there one way preferred over the other to keep them healthy?
In reality, no. It's just, you know, sometimes what it is they're not really multiple trunks. They probably, wherever, you know, whatever production nursery, they probably put three mimosas fairly close together, so they almost grow like a single tree. But they're probably three trees together, would be my guess. Or you could take a chance, you know, try to prune it down and see if you can get some new trunks coming up. Prune it down low, but it's really up to you.
Okay, because two of mine are volunteers.
Ah,
so yeah, so the third one, that's a chocolate mimosa. Is
really?
That from a graft?
Did you buy this? This is not a volunteer, correct?
No, I bought that one.
Yeah, so that one is probably, it was probably some hybrid, or either that or some natural hybrid that somebody found and started taking cuttings of it.
Okay, because last year it had a branch coming off of it that the leaves were green instead of, you know, the dark.
Right.
And so I just chopped it off, so...
You killed the branch? Oh, my goodness.
I know. It gave me heartburn, but it wasn't the chocolate. So, all right. Thank you so much. I love your show so much.
Well, thanks for having me on your show.
Let's
go from Alton to Baldwin and John.
Morning, Mike. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Good. Mike, how much soil do you need for a soil test?
Basically... probably like a good size Ziploc bag full.
Oh, that much. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they got to have a lot because they do several tests on it. And once they do a certain test on part of it, they can't reuse that part again. So,
okay.
You know, like from various locations, something maybe not quite as big as, a scoop of ice cream, but make sure you don't get any, let's say, root systems, any of that other stuff in it. You want pure soil.
Okay. And as far as this weed killer, it's going to rain tonight and tomorrow. Did it lay it out today or wait?
No, you can put it out because
great.
It's probably, depending upon the type, some of them you're supposed to water in anyway.
Right, that's what I figured.
Right.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Right. And now let's head to Millstad. Ainsley, how are you?
Good, how are you today?
Great.
I've got several pear trees on the family farm, two of them being over 100 years old.
Woo.
Yeah, they're family heirloom trees. What would be the best way to propagate these trees to try to get a couple more? I tried air rooting last fall, but realized that the fall is not the best time to air root. Could you take cuttings from these? Could you air root them? Would you graft them? How would you go about this?
Probably I would take cuttings and get, you know, the mix. Go to the University of Illinois Extension Service, or you can go to the Botanical Garden, see about taking cuttings and do it that way as opposed to anything else. You're going to need rooting hormone. You're going to probably need a pretty good potting mix. You're going to need the pots. Don't just stick them into the ground or anything. So grow them in pots for several years. And what you're going to do with the pots, you know, after you take the cutting, dip it in the rooting hormone and everything else and put it down into the pot, then dig a hole and drop the pot into a hole with a top inch or so above the surrounding ground.
Okay, have you heard of air rooting a pear tree? Does it? I maybe want to try one branch also.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly do that. It's just the process of air rooting is just it's a little bit weird, you know, to me. We used to do a lot of air rooting when I was at the Botanical Garden, but we were doing it in the Climatron. With the hardy plant material, I'm not exactly sure how well it's going to work.
Sure. I tried a Brumandia actually last year, air rooting a branch, and it worked really good, but those things root very easily.
Right.
But with a pear tree, I'm going to experiment a little bit. Obviously, we've got quite a bit of tree to play with this year. If I have any success, I'll definitely inform you and let you know how it goes. I appreciate it.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah. Air rooting, for people that don't quite understand what this is, you scrape part of the bark off, you wrap, you know, the area that you scraped, you tape around it, and what you want to do is have that part of the branch actually push roots out into this probably sphagnum peat moss is what you're going to put around the actual area that you've scraped the bark. And then once it starts rooting into that, then you allow enough roots that you think there's enough roots there that you can just cut the whole branch off just below where the air rooting roots are, and then put that air root into a pot. So to me, it's just kind of doing the same thing. And maybe it is a little bit quicker. I don't know. I've never really had that much success with air rooting myself. I've played around with a couple different plants, mainly messing around with a couple different Japanese maples. So I've not done fruit trees, but maybe it will work very well. So look forward to hearing and finding out if that actually is going to work for you. We do have another hour of the Garden Hotline. Well, maybe not a full hour, because the Cardinals got a press conference coming up at 9:45. So, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you do have any questions, get online, 314, not online, on the phone line, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, celebrating 25 years as your host of the Garden Hotline. Here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, and I'll be giving it shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. By the way, thanks for having me on your show where we can discuss plant selection, the ups and downs, annuals. Man, the pansies are looking great. I've seen them in several different locations. Your spring bulbs, as I said in the first hour during the Good Gardening Stroll, house up the street from me, south-facing wall, their daffodils are in bloom. Mine are just showing some foliage. How about your edibles, your cool season vegetables, your ground covers, your houseplants, your lawn, perennials, roses, tree shrubs, vines, or water gardens? I like to share my thoughts, but remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered to you as maybe to an angle that you haven't thought about. Alex is producing today, and he's really juggling a lot of things with the press conference coming up at 9:45. During the week, I spend my time doing landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. I come to you, discuss whatever's going on in your yard, and answer the problems that you might have. It's called a walk and talk, and you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, on the homepage. That's where my email address and phone number are listed. Tip of the Trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the Trowel goes out to the Missouri Botanical Garden. Next weekend, seasonal reopenings. After we've entered spring, the garden will reopen the children's garden, Tower Grove House, and Cafe Flora. The educational staff will offer regular programming, including nature observations and discoveries in the children's garden, hands-on exploration activities at the Brookings Exploration Center as well, and story time at the Tower Grove House. So the Botanical Garden's opening up all kinds of things. Then on April 5th and 6th, Arbor Day, tree giveaway. So what they're going to have is small saplings of trees and head down to the Botanical Garden. So there's all kinds of stuff coming up. And as well, on April 5th, the beauty of spring and the season of the Chinese, the Japanese cherries. So the Japanese garden specialist will be on hand to guide you. And there'll be some sake samplings as well. So all kinds of stuff going on in the Botanical Garden. Just give you a little bit of insight. So if you do have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's go to Chesterfield into Charlie's yard.
Hi, Mike. Hi. Thanks for my call.
Sure.
Quick question. I have three butterfly bushes that are about 3 to 4 feet high. And should I cut them back now? And how much should I cut them back?
You don't need to cut them back. There's no reason to. But if you are going to do any pruning, do it before any kind of foliage starts emerging.
Okay. If I don't cut them back, will they just continue to get bigger and bigger?
Well, depending upon variety. Some of them are going to be relatively small. Some of them will continue to get bigger and bigger. But at 3 feet, my tendency would be they don't sound like they're that old unless they've been in the ground for a long time. And if that's as big as they're getting, then they're probably a dwarf variety. If they've been in the ground just a few years, that size, I would just let them go for at least a little bit longer.
Okay. Do they creep because I had a butterfly bush about 4 feet from where they are, and it died out, and these just came up.
Generally, they don't do that. I mean, I guess they could drop some seeds, but that's not something that, you know, a butterfly bush is known to, like, self-seed itself.
Okay, so I'll let them grow this year. If I decide to cut them back next year, how much should I cut them back?
Probably only one-third at the most. But, yeah, they don't send out underground rhizomes and pop up at other places like some shrubbery does. That's not something the butterfly bush does. They're a clump grower. They kind of stay within themselves. So how these other ones came about, I think somebody probably snuck into your yard and planted them in the middle of the night while you were asleep.
Well, mystery. All right.
Exactly.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate your program.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. Let's jump the river and go to Belleville. Joanne, you there?
Yes. Good morning.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mike, I have boxwoods, which I did not do anything with in the fall. My burning bush, I did trim them back. So is now a good time to prune both of those at this, or should I wait?
Why prune your burning bush if you prune them in the fall? Why do you want to prune them again?
Well, I didn't get them as low as I wanted to. I was dealing with just sticks.
Well, just watch out. You know, you prune them back, I don't know how big they are, but I never like to cut more than like one-third off deciduous shrubs. Now, with your boxwood, how big are they? How tall are they?
Oh, they're about 3-4 feet.
And
I just want to shape them primarily before the new growth.
Exactly.
Is that doable?
Yeah, get that done as soon as possible.
Okay. All right, Mike. Thank you. I enjoy the show. Have a good day.
Well, thank you. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages. To the phones we go. We're headed South County. And Kathy, how are you?
Good morning, Mike. This is Kathy.
Hi.
Congratulations on your 25 years.
Well, thank you.
I'm wondering if it is too early to plant pansies in the ground, and how long will they last before they need to be replaced during the summer?
Basically, the pansies can go in now. They can go in pots in the ground. This is their season. They want it when it's cool. What's going to happen is they're just going to, when the weather starts getting hot. They'll start elongating, they'll stop flowering, and then you can just, yank them out and put some summer annuals in.
Okay, so they can go in the ground. They don't have to go in pots?
No, not at all. In the ground is
okay.
Fine.
Okay, thank you very much.
Certainly. Let's go to O'Fallon and see what's going on with Ken.
Yeah, Mike?
Yes.
I've got about a 15-foot
tall evergreen that when we had that windstorm, I guess, it's been kind of pushed over. It didn't fall, and the roots aren't showing. But is there any way I could pull it back into straightening it up?
Something that large, you're going to have a hard time doing it, to be honest with you. You could try to do it. Get the stakes in the ground. You're going to probably do a two-prong thing. Stakes in the ground. Run the wire up and around. Then start. You know, have somebody continue to push it until it gets to the point that you got it, as right as you can. But just make sure that the wire that's going to go onto that's going to touch the tree trunk, you put a piece of hose there. So, in other words, that will keep it from the wire
from digging into it.
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. You got to do that. If you don't do that, you're basically going to behead the thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it is possible that I can pull it back up to more of a straight position.
Yeah, but it is going to be a physical effort that's beyond control. And even though you don't see any roots, let's say, on the surface, there has to be some major root damage. The feeder roots and other things like that have been torn off or torn apart. So for the thing to readjust itself and reacclimate, it's going to be quite a process.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've had it since it was a yearling.
Oh, my.
And it's a beautiful tree. I decorate it for Christmas and that.
Right.
And right now it's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. the ground is kind of cracked open, but I don't see any, it's not that far where I see any roots or anything. It's just that the ground is kind of pulled apart.
Before you start trying to, let's say get it straightened up, make sure you water heavily so you can get the ground as soft as possible. So that may minimize some of the root damage that would happen.
Ah, good idea. Okay, great. Great. Love the show. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And let's go back to South City. Richard. Hello, Richard.
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Good morning. Hey, I got some dahlias, and I don't know how deep to plant them, and I don't know if you got to take them up every year like tulips.
Well, you don't have to take up tulips, but dahlias are not hardy. So some people have had good luck with leaving them in the ground in areas like in the city where they've been planted close to, let's say, houses or something, so there was some protection from that standpoint. But for the most part, those tubers are not, basically hardy, plant material. So if we have a severe winter, they could die if you left them in the ground. Now, have you grown them in the past?
A friend of mine gave me a few last year. This is my first year. I took them out and, I got to plant them. I don't know how deep to plant them.
Right. It depends upon what variety they are. Some of them are relatively small. Other ones get huge. So you can kind of look and kind of hold them where you'll know where the stem is versus the root system. The root system will kind of just dangle down. So you want that, basically that stem part, the top of where the root systems are, unless above the crown, let's put it that way. You want that about 2 or 3 inches below the surface. And it's got to be in a very well-drained soil.
Another thing, when can I plant a cannas?
I put mine out yesterday, let's say on Wednesday.
Oh, okay. So, well, that pretty much does it. Hey, Mike, I'd like to ask you an off-the-wall question about, people with zoysia years ago, they used to burn the lawns.
Right.
Does it actually take care of the bad seeds?
No, it doesn't really take care of the bad seed. What it does is it's dethatching your lawn. So in other words, that was how they used to dethatch, and then the cities and various areas said no more lawn burning. So then that's when the machinery came out.
I can understand that. I sure do appreciate your show, Mike, and thank you for the information.
Well, thank you. And let's see. Let's go now to Rob in St. Charles. Hi, Rob.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Hey, first of all, congratulations on 25 years. Thanks for everything. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
And I just had a quick question, kind of similar to the guys before, but I had about four pretty good sized pear trees, and between the houses there and on the side there, and I lost a couple with all this, and you know, my fault, I didn't keep them pruned real good and stuff like that. So I ended up having to take them all out because I was worried about further storms and losing them and right. stuff like that. So now I have just a plot of, like, because no grass really grew under there, so it's like a lot of just dirt. And I was wondering, other than sod, which would probably work the best, would zoysia work better in there? Does anything work quicker, or just like some perennial ryegrass to just get something to put in there to start? Any suggestions on that?
Well, perennial ryegrass is a short live thing, so it's going to be hit. It'll be there and then it'll be gone. So, were this? I mean, the root systems of the trees. How long ago were they taken out? Let's put it that way.
They were taken out, a couple. Well, it was during the first batch here, so like early, like about 3 months ago or so.
Well, the root systems are still going to be viable, so anything that you plant there is going to have a difficult time getting established. I won't fool you. And even if the stumps are ground out and everything else, the root systems are there. They don't know they've been beheaded, so they're going to still keep uptaking nutrients and moisture, and that's where the problem is going to come from. So probably what I would do is maybe go ahead and just, try some grass seed, get all the, any kind of grindings or wood or anything out of there as much as you possibly can, and just throw seed out every, now, throw some seed out in May, throw some more seed out in September, and just expect it to not work so good.
Right. Okay.
And if I'm saying use seed as opposed to sod, because the sod's not going to get established either.
Yeah. And any of those zoysia plugs probably wouldn't get established either or anything like that.
Well, they're going to be competing. You could try both. And then,
that's not a bad idea.
And that way you can find out which one's going to work the best as far as getting established.
Yeah, because I get a little bit of runoff between the two, too, so that's another thing to worry about. But at least if I can get something to help with a little bit of the erosion.
Right, exactly.
All right. Hey, well, thanks again for everything. Appreciate it.
All right. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. Yes, folks, we're headed to Glendale. Mark, how are you? Hello, Mark. Mark, are you there? Guess Mark's gone. Okay, let's go to Barb in North County then. Hello, Barb? Barb, are you there? We hear your phone. We're having some trouble here. That's going to be Rich in Hot Springs. Or House Springs. Rich?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
I got some yuccas that are 30 years old, and they've kind of gotten unruly. How do I clean them up? And plus, I dug some of them up because they were taken over, and I dug them down, got into those roots, and dug I thought of roots up, and now I got volunteers come up. How do I kill that?
Well, to be honest with you, they got a huge root system that goes very, very deep. So to dig them up is going to be really problematic. I mean, you can do it, but you're just going to have to stay on them and on them and on them. And as they start sending up new shoots off where you've removed the plant material, just keep digging if you want to do that. Or you can get an herbicide and kill them off that way.
Okay.
So,
what about cleaning up the older ones?
Have they flowered yet?
No,
so they haven't flowered. As far as cleaning them up, I don't know exactly. I mean, just cut off some of the blades that you don't necessarily like how they look, but that's about all. There is really no cleanup. They just kind of form a giant big clump.
Yeah, and then all the dead, and it kind of gets like a big old root wad at the bottom.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, they're kind of somewhat of a disaster. Now let's see if we can go to Mark in Glendale. Oh, let's go to Jack in
Jeff?
Kirkwood. Sorry. Jack, are you there? Jeff in Chesterfield, then.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Hey, two questions. One, in front of my house, we have hydrangeas. Used to bloom like crazy. Don't bloom at all anymore. One of the causes might be we lost some fig trees that provided shade, but one side isn't affected by that at all. So is it just fertilizer?
It could be fertilizer. It could be just the age of the plant as also. So, I mean, both
really?
Those factors.
They just get too old.
Yeah.
Oh, so they might be too old.
Right.
I didn't know they got that way.
Well, I mean, some of them, it just depends upon the individual circumstance. Fertilizing and everything else and just soil improvement by, let's say, augering holes, putting compost into the soil and those sort of things. And depending upon the variety, if they're close to your house, they're going to, you know, the soil is going to be alkaline. So maybe the soil is too alkaline for them. It needs to be acidic for the hydrangeas. So that may be a factor as far as flowering also.
Yep. Okay. So we've been putting coffee grounds down through the winter, so maybe that'll help.
Well, that helps very little, but psychologically it helps. Actually, soil-wise, it doesn't really help that much.
Oh, well, then we'll put some more serious stuff down then.
Right.
Second question then was around ivy. Side of my house, very shady. When I moved in 7 years ago, there was all kinds of ivy in this bed on the side of the house instead of grass. All that ivy has now died off and just gone away. Is it because I changed the watering schedule? The trees have not changed. It's right next to a woods. It's always been heavily shaded.
No, it probably isn't that. It may be just the age. Ivy has a tendency, as it gets to be a certain age, like 15-plus years, the old stems will elongate with no foliage on them, and they'll just be, let's say, leaves at the very end of it.
Interesting. Okay, so just try replanting then and see what happens.
Exactly.
Is it true that that stuff does better if you plant it kind of in bunches as opposed to kind of spreading them out and trying to get it to fill in?
Well, infill is just, it's very painful. So, I mean, if you put them 6 inches apart, they should be able to fill in pretty quickly.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
All right, great. What? I don't know what you're saying. Let's Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, that's going to about do it today because the Cardinals have a press conference, and Tom Ackerman's down in Florida. He's going to be talking to one of the great players, the first baseman. So anyway, what could be better than that? Have a great day. Enjoy the first weekend of spring. Party on!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.